This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Arthritis is a condition we associate with older people, although children get it too. Still, we are all getting older, so arthritis may be in your future. It is estimated that by 2030, 25% of all adults 18 and over will have arthritis. That's 67 million people. About 25 million of them will have activity limitations stemming from that condition. Arthritis is painful, persistent, and costly. It impacts the U.S. economy to the tune of $128 billion every year. So what exactly is arthritis? What causes it? What, if anything, can you do to prevent getting it? And if you have it, how can you control it? We'll spend this hour talking about that with Dr. Diane George with Mecklenburg Medical Group Rheumatology and Nick Turkus, Senior Vice President of Health and Wellness for the Arthritis Foundation Mid-Atlantic Region. Dr. George is in our studio here at Spirit Square. Nick Turkus should arrive shortly. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And we're also joined by Bonnie Walsh. She's a registered dietitian with a form of the disease in which white blood cells attack a person's moisture-producing glands. She also has another condition involving connective tissue and knows firsthand how dietary intervention can help in the daily management of arthritis. Thank you for being here as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning. As I mentioned in the opening minute, which we don't hear in the studio here, there are many different types of arthritis, but the two most common ones are, if I got this correct, osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. What are the principal differences, doctor, between those two conditions?
Yep, that's right. So rheumatoid arthritis is more of a, what we call inflammatory arthritis. So usually there will be swelling of joints. That would be like the main difference. And osteoarthritis is more, there's joint disease and pain, but there's not usually swelling. That's something that's much rarer in osteoarthritis. And usually osteoarthritis is more of a wear and tear type of arthritis. So it tends to occur from sort of overuse if you've had a previous fracture, whereas rheumatoid is an autoimmune disease where your body's immune system becomes disordered and starts attacking joints.
So what kind of things do we do repetitively that might lead to osteoarthritis?
So if you've had some sort of injury before, like a meniscal tear, a cruciate ligament tear, those kind of things, a fracture, or just day-to-day activities, if you do a lot of heavy lifting, carrying, those kind of things, if they're not done properly, can predispose you to having back arthritis.
And is arthritis a disease or a condition?
I like to think of it more as a condition. There is no cure for it. It's something that you, it's all about lifestyle changes and making yourself comfortable so that you're able to relieve the pain and be able to continue with your life. I don't feel like it's always a disease. I mean, in some people it does become where it is disabling, and so you know, it does affect your life significantly. But I like to think of it more as a condition.
What about juvenile arthritis? Who does it impact, and at what age does it usually present?
So juvenile arthritis is more of an inflammatory type of arthritis. A lot of times it's very similar to rheumatoid. So it's with inflammation of joints or sometimes inflammation in the back. It can occur at any age, but there are certain peaks. There's around the 1 year to 3 year age group. And then again, there are more different peaks depending on the type of arthritis. Again, around 9 to 16 years of age.
Yeah, within the diagnosis of juvenile arthritis, there are a number of different subsets or varieties, and I'm going to name them. I'm going to get some of these wrong. Systemic arthritis. Is it oligoarthritis? Is
that oligoarthritis. Oligo, yeah, that means just fewer joints.
Okay, polyarthritis, psoriatric arthritis.
Yeah, psoriatic.
Okay, and enthesitis. How do you say that?
Infectious.
Enthesitis.
Oh, sorry, enthesitis.
Enthesitis-related arthritis and undifferentiated arthritis. These are all different forms?
They're all different. Really, it's more a description of the pattern of the arthritis. And this is more in juvenile arthritis, but we also see similar forms or, you know, there are correlations in adult arthritis as well. So he's really describing the pattern. So for example, oligo means fewer than four joints. And affected poly means several joints, like a rheumatoid pattern. So small joints of the hands are affected more than big joints. The enthesitis is mainly where tendons and ligaments attach to the bone, they can get inflamed.
Do we know what causes all these? these things, the rheumatoid varieties?
Well, we don't know exactly. There are still ongoing studies, but we think it's a combination of genes. There's definitely predisposition from genes that occur. For example, in rheumatoid arthritis, there's a gene on called HLA-DR4 that's associated. There's a condition called ankylosing spondylitis, which is basically an inflammation in the back that's associated with a gene called HLA-B27. But also we think there's hormones involved because women tend to get more rheumatoid arthritis than men. And then we think there are environmental factors. And we know for sure, obviously not in juvenile arthritis, but in adults, smoking is a big correlation between smoking as a trigger for arthritis and worsening arthritis symptoms.
Do we understand why that might be?
We don't know exactly. We think there's something to do with certain antibodies that are produced, but, you know, there are still studies about that.
And I'm told that children who have juvenile arthritis not only need to see a doctor who specializes in that, they also need to keep tabs on seeing an ophthalmologist and perhaps a dentist and their orthodontist as well, if they have an orthodontist. Why?
That's right. So the reason for seeing an eye doctor is because they can get inflammation in the eye. So the arthritis not only affects your joints, but can also cause inflammation of other connective tissue. And your eye, you know, especially that white part of your eye contains connective tissue, and you can get a uveitis or a scleritis, which is inflammation of those parts of the eye, which can cause vision, you know, threaten your vision. So it's very important to prevent vision loss and to have that screened. They need to see dentists because, as we mentioned about Sjogren's syndrome, that can cause dry mouth and or dry eyes. And so the dry mouth can cause or predispose patients to having a lot of cavities. And so that can be something that they can keep an eye on. And also if they have any jaw inflammation, that also needs to be monitored.
We mentioned Sjogren's syndrome only off the air. We haven't talked about it on the air. And Bonnie Walsh is with us. She's a registered dietitian who happens to suffer from Sjogren's syndrome. What exactly is that? That's a form of arthritis?
Yes. Sjogren's is an autoimmune disease that your body is actually attacking its own moisture glands, the cells in your body that produces moisture. And it's a lot more than just dry eyes and dry mouth. It can affect your joints and can affect, cause connective tissue patterns similar to rheumatoid and other types of arthritis and cause joint inflammation and pain because it is rheumatoid. It is all over the body. And they do screenings. The doctors, the rheumatologists find it in the blood. They also do lip biopsies for it, and they also do a test in the eye, checking for moisture levels and things like that.
When did you first begin to know that you had a problem, before you even knew what it was?
Actually had difficulty as a child with pink eye and dry eye, and was in and out of the orthopedic with knee problems and had a lot of difficulty growing up, and we just never really knew what it was, and had problems wearing contacts, you know, when you got to high school, and difficulty with the eyes in college, and then with pregnancy, and then over the years, the dryness just progressed, and eventually it was discovered, through more and more testing that it was actually Sjogren's.
Run in your family, or are you the first?
The first.
So no one knew anything about this.
Mm-mm. My mother actually got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis after I had already been diagnosed with Sjogren's.
Mm-hmm. Going back to rheumatoid arthritis, this happens, as I understand it, Doctor, when the body's defense mechanisms don't work properly. They go after themselves. Correct.
Correct. So there, for some reason, in rheumatoid arthritis, there are targets in the joints that your body produces. You know, in your normal immune system, you produce antibodies. These are proteins that help to attack, you know, infections. Mm-hmm. But in rheumatoid arthritis, somehow that gets disordered, and those antibodies go after targets in your joints. And that's how, when they go after them, they produce inflammation there and cause all sorts of white cells and things like that to go towards a cell and cause the swelling, the pain that patients experience.
Do we understand that? This happens in a lot of other autoimmune diseases as well. Do we understand why the body does this and when it does it?
We don't know exactly. There's still a lot of studies going on to that. I mean, it seems, there is something that triggers it. We don't know if there's some infection that goes on. Sometimes there's been some studies that show that there may be an association with periodontal disease, that is gum disease. Mm-hmm. But we really, still a lot of studies and research that needs to be known into why that happens. But you're right, other disease like Sjogren's is another autoimmune disease. You might have heard of lupus. That's another one that can also attack the joints. So there's, for some reason, the joints seem to be a target for, disordered immune
disease. Is lupus a form of arthritis?
Yes. Well, lupus is a systemic autoimmune disease. So it can attack organs as well as joints. And yes, it can cause an inflammation that looks like rheumatoid arthritis.
And can rheumatoid arthritis impact the soft tissue as well as bone and joints?
Yes. So it can affect other, your tendons as well. It can affect the eyes, just like I mentioned in juvenile arthritis. It can cause a scleritis, which is inflammation of the connective tissue in the eye. And it can actually also affect your lungs. Rarely it can cause an inflammation in your lungs as well.
Nick Turkus is also with us. He's the Senior Vice President with Health and Wellness for The Arthritis Foundation. Thank you very much. We sent him to the wrong studio, but he's made it to our Spirit Square studio. Good morning and welcome. Is it safe to say, because you deal with people all over this region from throughout the Mid-Atlantic region who have this, that if we reach a certain age, all of us will have some form of arthritis at some point in our lives? Is that true?
Well, you probably will have radiographic evidence that you have arthritis somewhere in your body.
Radiographic means x-rays?
What does that mean? That's right. They will be able to determine that there was some deterioration of your cartilage. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you would have any disability or any pain or any loss of function due to your arthritis. In fact, 2/3 of people that have arthritis are under the age of 65, and not everyone who reaches the age of 100 has any real problem with arthritis. So it really depends, and you hear the doctor and the dietitian talk about all these different forms of arthritis and all the different types. And most people that I talk to that have arthritis, when I ask them what type of arthritis they have, they say the kind that hurts or the kind in my knees. And most people really don't understand all of these different types of arthritis and all the different resources that are available. And that's why the Arthritis Foundation is here to kind of help you make sense of what do those aches and pains really mean.
Well, let's talk about the symptoms. What are they?
Well, it hurts. If you have pain in a joint for more than 2 weeks, it's time to see the doctor. And that seems like common sense, but so many people will say, well, I am just getting older, or I was doing some extra yard work, or it'll probably go away. And it might. It might be a sprain. It might be a strain. It might be osteoarthritis. It might be bone cancer. You just don't know. So it's best to go talk to a physician and find out. And there are things that you can do for your arthritis pain. A lot of people think, I have to live with arthritis pain. And I always say, well, that's better than the alternative. You better take control of your arthritis pain, because there are lots of things that you can do. There isn't one magic pill, but there are daily things that you can do to manage every day to manage that pain.
I'm going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about some of these symptoms, specific symptoms, because there must be some things that show up that you can go, you got it. And some of the things that you do to treat people with these various different conditions as well. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the professional MBA program at USC's Darla Moore School of Business, now in Uptown Charlotte. Details at moore.sc.edu/PMBA. And the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure, Saturday, October 5th, Uptown Charlotte, supporting breast cancer education, research, and services throughout the region. Registration and details at komencharlotte.org. We are not the same city we were in 1968. If you've been around that long, you certainly know that. For newcomers, the fact becomes all too apparent if you read the latest issue of Charlotte Magazine. They are observing their 45th anniversary by looking back 45 years to 1968 and looking ahead 45 years to 2058. And we'll get in on the tour tomorrow morning at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the political agenda as lawmakers return to Washington, how the debate over Syria could shift priorities on Capitol Hill.
That's the topic on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about arthritis today with Dr. Diane George, rheumatologist with Mecklenburg Medical Group Rheumatology, Nick Turkus, Senior Vice President for Health and Wellness for the Arthritis Foundation Mid-Atlantic Region, and Bonnie Walsh, a registered dietitian who has done work with children, as a matter of fact, who have juvenile arthritis. And she herself suffers from something called Sjögren's syndrome. Nick mentioned that when people complain about this, when they first get alerted to the fact that they might have arthritis, they complain about the pain. What is causing the pain?
So the pain is really in osteoarthritis or wear and tear. It's oftentimes there is wearing down of the cartilage between the joints or the bone. And so that can often triggers a little bit of inflammation and causes the nerves to also be affected.
Because bone is touching bone?
Exactly, yes. And just from the wear and tear, from the reduced amount of cartilage mm-hmm. and the stress around on the tendons, the ligaments, things like mm-hmm. that also causes pain. And a small amount of inflammation.
So as you lose cartilage, mm-hmm. Your connective tissues have to stretch because there's
right.
nothing holding the joints apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not as balanced as well. Your okay. body's designed very mechanically to take those stresses and strains, and once that cartilage starts breaking down, it's not taking the stress.
Is this inevitable? I mean, everybody has something in their life where they like. Let's take for instance these kids today. These kids today who play video games mm-hmm. and they're using their thumbs like maniacs on these controllers and also texting and things like that. That's a repetitive motion. When they're 65, are they going to have arthritis in their thumbs, you think?
Yeah, I think that does predispose them to having arthritis. And I've certainly seen a lot of people with what I call texter's thumb. They've been doing a lot of texting and they've got a lot of pain in the thumb and tendonitis.
What about musicians who spend hours a day practicing with their fingers and their hands?
Mm-hmm, absolutely, yes. Piano players, I see a lot of patients who have arthritis in their hands from overuse from that. So yes, I mean, definitely doing something repetitively and you see that, or they can get tendonitis also in their hands or tendon nodules mm-hmm. from that, which is also a kind of connective tissue related to arthritis problem. So yes, using things over and over again definitely makes you more prone to having arthritis.
So that takes me back to the question, because most of us do something repetitively in our lives, whether it's a cook who chops potatoes every day or whatever it is, are we all going to get something like this at some point down the road?
Well, it depends also on genes. Some people are more prone genetically to having arthritis. Certainly there are some, there are families where wear and tear and osteoarthritis runs, more commonly than other families. So it depends on genes, again, on environment, and also about how you take care of your joints as well. So you want to be exercising, keeping them moving, trying to strengthen the tendons and muscles around your joints to prevent that from happening, and preventing high impact, to your joints. So avoiding, if you are cutting with a knife, trying to find techniques where you're putting less stress and less direct impact onto your joints.
This can be debilitating. Not always, but some people just have the pain and have to deal with it. For most people, how serious a problem is this, Nick?
For most people, they will experience pain on a regular basis. But for many people, arthritis can be very debilitating. In fact, it's the number one cause of disability in the U.S. And I speak to many people on the phone and out in the community that have problems doing simple daily activities like getting their socks on, opening doorknobs, lifting something from a high shelf, picking up something off the floor can be very difficult. Even things, personal things like getting off the toilet can be extremely painful for people with arthritis. And it's important for people, for everyone to know how serious a disease that can be.
You have some practical things to say about this, Bonnie, because although you're a registered dietitian and you're still working, you've had to curtail your work schedule because of your condition, correct?
Correct. I found I could not handle the day-to-day full-time work at all.
Why? What happened?
My body just wore down. I just couldn't do the lifting, the typing of notes, the things that went along with full time. Mm-hmm. You know, I can do a few hours, you know, very, very part time, you know, enough to keep my license and to stay active and to enjoy it, but nothing substantial. You know?
And we should point out that you are young. You are not 70 or 80 years old. You are a very young woman. When did you back away from your career?
It's only been in the last couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah, I went out of work 3 years ago.
And you worked for over 15 years as a registered dietitian, specializing in pediatric developmental disorders and allergies, including work with juvenile arthritis and juvenile rheumatoid arthritis patients. How does this, from your experience in dealing with these young people, how does it impact them?
It does. The young children that I worked with, some of them that were school age, for the children it was hard to, some of them had very hard days trying to be in school sitting in their chairs all day long. They would get stiff, they would get sore, and then to try to come home and then to sit and do homework, it was too much for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes PE was very hard for them, you know, physical education. So there was a lot of things that were just very difficult and would find that had to be adapted. Some of them even had children. The children that I saw, typically my involvement was because they usually had trouble with eating or had trouble with their weight.
Mm-hmm.
And that was usually where I got involved because I was working with them either with their trying to find foods that they could tolerate and eat, or foods that were soft, foods that they didn't have trouble swallowing, foods that they could tolerate, or maybe they had intolerances. And so my involvement was usually more of a dietary.
Now, you have Sjögren's syndrome, which we talked about a little bit, which causes dryness in connective tissue, in dryness of the mouth, dryness of the eyes, which can be very painful. Everybody knows about that, I suppose, at some point in their lives. But you also have some other difficulties stemming from arthritic conditions, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones really that kept you from working more so than the Sjögren's. Am I correct about that?
No, okay. Not really. The Sjögren's is what got so advanced for me. The dry mouth is also in the dry throat, mm-hmm. Dry lungs. I was picking
dry
up...
Dry lungs?
Yes, dry lungs. I was picking up infections from the kids. Every time I turned around, I was sick. And my lungs and my throat were so dry, I could not cough anything up. So every time I would get sick, I would get laryngitis. And sometimes I had laryngitis for 6 to 8 weeks. And I was going on antibiotics and steroids and inhalers and just strong medications trying to get it out of my system because I couldn't cough it out. If you don't have the moisture in there, your body just doesn't have a natural defense to try to cough that out.
How unusual is this condition, Doctor?
Sjögren's syndrome is fairly common condition.
Really?
Yes. So it's you know, I pick a lot of patients up who come in with a lot of fatigue. So I think you were mentioning that, you know, it was difficult to work. And I think a lot of patients have a very severe fatigue that we can never find a reason for. And so when they mention dry eyes, dry mouth, and we do some of the blood testing, or sometimes we have to do more further workup, that's when we pick it up. So it's actually much more common than we actually realize. And then there's also patients, you know, when these are autoimmune conditions, and so it's a disordered immune system, as I mentioned. So a lot of times they're more prone to getting infections as well. And unfortunately, some of the treatments lower your immune system too. So it's sometimes very complicated treating it.
You mentioned genes. There are certain genes that might contribute to these conditions. Is it genetic? If your mother or your father has arthritis, or your grandmother or your grandfather had it, are you likely to get it? Does it skip generations and people end up being fine? Or how would you describe it?
Yeah, that's a common question I get. So it depends on the type of arthritis. So rheumatoid arthritis, yes, it does tend to run in families, but it's not like if your mother has it, you're definitely going to have it. It's more like the population risk of or incidence of rheumatoid arthritis is about 1%. So 1 in every 100 people have rheumatoid arthritis. So if your mother has it, your risk increases from 1% to 5%. So when you put that in perspective, it's not a very high risk. So yes, we do generally see it runs in families, but it's definitely not like passed on.
How important is treatment? If you have it, how important is seeking treatment? In other words, can you ignore it? Because Nick said some people just say, well, I got the pain and I'll live with it. How important is the treatment? Does it hurt you not to be treated?
Absolutely. I agree with Nick. I think if you have it more than 2 weeks, you should seek treatment, first with the primary care doctor to see who's the appropriate person you should see if you need to see someone further. And the reason for that is because, for example, rheumatoid arthritis, if it's not treated, it can cause damage to your joints and can cause disability. You know, you might have seen pictures before of patients where they have crippled-looking hands where they're not able to move their, use their hands properly, and that can affect your function, your ability to work. And also it can cause systemic symptoms, as I mentioned, like fevers and fatigue and, those kind of things.
So it isn't just a matter of being macho and toughing it out. It could actually cause you more damage and therefore more pain down the road.
Absolutely. Just like she said, especially with rheumatoid arthritis, there has been a real revolution in the treatment, the drugs that are used to manage rheumatoid arthritis, these new biologic drugs. These are drugs that are injected or you get through it in an infusion, and they can really stop the immune system from damaging and destroying the joints completely. And before these drugs were available, people were very likely to be completely disabled, be in wheelchairs, have to use crutches for their arthritis. And now people that do get early aggressive treatment are much, much less likely to have those problems than before. And the treatments before these drugs were not very effective.
How new were these drugs? How new were these treatments?
Late 90s is when they really came on board. Enbrel was the first major drug, but now there's more than a dozen different biologic drugs that are available.
Let me ask you a question about that, because that's exactly when we began noticing in every commercial break in news a drug for something.
Sure.
And many times you don't know what the drugs are for because they're not specific about what they're talking about. I guess if you're in that category of people who suffer from that condition, you will be familiar. But what is causing this tsunami of drugs to suddenly be released for every known condition?
Well,
is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing that people know the treatments are available. And I think it's a good thing that people go to their doctor and they ask the expert, would this drug be helpful? And most physicians will be happy to discuss with you whether yes or no that drug would be helpful or not, and we would be happy to talk with you.
Is it helpful to you as a physician to have people coming in saying, I saw a commercial yesterday for the striped pill. I want to put a color on it. The striped pill, and they say that's for me. Can you write me a prescription for that? Is that a problem?
Actually, I thought it would be, but it hasn't been as much of a problem as I thought. A lot of times it helps to direct the conversation and explain to my patient, what is the condition that they have and why I'm treating them that way. And I don't think, or I do think it's appropriate and have that discussion. So actually it hasn't been that bad. And just to come back to the point about why are there so many, new commercials and new drugs, I think when they first found Enbrel, they found that it works and it was kind of a little bit of a fluke. And so they started doing more studies, and now we have lots and lots of studies proving that drugs like Enbrel or like Humira work in rheumatoid arthritis. And
was it developed for rheumatoid arthritis, or did they just discovered that it had a positive impact?
It was actually used for something else, and then they found that it worked as a reducing inflammation because it works in that pathway, and they found it worked for rheumatoid arthritis. And then they did more studies and found it works in psoriatic arthritis, and now they're finding more and more indications where it works, and they've been doing studies.
There's certainly a place for drugs. There's no question about that. But what about diet? You're the dietitian here, Bonnie. Does diet play a role in this? Are there foods that people who are prone to having arthritis or who have arthritis should eat or should not eat?
Certainly, diet does play a role in arthritis, and I get that question a lot. Is there an actual diet for arthritis? Not really. Probably not. Surprisingly enough, though, the same diets that are good for your heart and good for cancer and just good for your overall health is the same thing that is going to be good for arthritis.
So low-fat foods?
Low-fat foods.
High-fiber foods?
High-fiber foods, yep, whole grain. And the reason for that is that the foods that fight inflammation, what we have in common with heart disease and cancer and basically with arthritis is inflammation. So foods that help with fighting inflammation is the key in those diets. So a Mediterranean diet, foods that are low in fat and, you know, those white processed foods and high-fat foods – those kind of increase inflammation, where foods that are low in fat, high in fiber, rich in fruits and vegetables or antioxidants, that helps to decrease the inflammation.
Do we know why?
Well, the reason for it basically is the pathways that fight inflammation. Antioxidants help to like antioxidants that are found in your fruits and vegetables, like your vitamin A, your vitamin C, your vitamin D, calcium, and a lot of your minerals, they play a role, especially the antioxidants, in helping to fight the free radicals. And free radicals are things found in the environment that are breaking down your cells and inflaming your joints.
Well, I'm going to come back to food, but let's talk about inflammation, because that seems to me to be a big problem, and we know that there is a connection between inflammation of, like, your gums and your heart for some reason. What is the inflammation in arthritis being caused by the same thing that's causing the pain, or is the pain being caused by the inflammation?
That's a good question. It seems like it's more, it seems like it's the inflammation that's causing the pain. So at least in rheumatoid arthritis.
Because it causes swelling and the connective tissue gets squeezed, or what's going on?
Right, the connective tissues become, when they're inflamed, they're enlarged and they start pressing on nerves, and then that triggers the pain. In osteoarthritis, wear and tear, it's a little bit more the kind of the other way around, where you're having, wear and tear on the cartilage, and that causes the inflammation.
I see.
And causes the pain.
So it depends on the kind of arthritis we're talking about.
Right.
There was some thought at some time, Bonnie, about nightshade vegetables, eggplants, tomatoes, red bell peppers, other peppers, even potatoes, being foods that could trigger arthritis pain. Not so much, or is that true?
Well, there are still a lot of people that seem to think that they trigger their arthritis. And what we usually recommend is that people go ahead and test them and see if they do, because a lot of the time it's not the nightshade vegetables that are triggering it. A lot of people have other types of sensitivities or allergies, and if they will do like an elimination diet, work with a dietitian, many times it's something else that's triggering their arthritis. Sometimes it can be a wheat sensitivity or a gluten intolerance or something else that's going on that they don't even realize that they have.
And is that difficult to find?
It can be. Sometimes it's a matter of, doing some allergy testing, having the doctor run an allergy panel of the basic eight allergy foods. And sometimes it's just working with the dietitian, but usually it can be picked up.
Bonnie Walsh is a registered dietitian. We're talking about arthritis. We'll continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and St. Andrew's Sewanee School, a progressive boarding and day school in Sewanee, Tennessee, offering intellectual challenge and personal attention. Accepting applications for enrollment, sasweb.org. And the Billy Graham Library, presenting Major Scotty Smiley, the U.S. Army's first blind active duty officer, at the Men's Breakfast, Saturday, September 14th, at the Billy Graham Library. Details at billygrahamlibrary.org. The Political Agenda. As lawmakers return to Washington, the topic of the discussion in 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, how the debate over Syria could shift priorities on Capitol Hill. And by the way, Tivola Senior Center and the Arthritis Foundation are teaming up to present Better Living with Arthritis, an expo featuring one of our guests today, and they'll be doing that September the 10th from 10 to 1:30 at the Tivola Senior Center. Information on our website, WFAE.org.
The car served me through college, grad school. It moved me from Minneapolis to Portland, Oregon, and then Portland, Oregon to Augusta, Georgia. And the Lumina is still giving by putting my favorite programs on the air. It feels awesome. My name is Bethany, and I donated my car to public radio.
Your unwanted vehicle can support your favorite WFAE shows with the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. Get details at WFAE.org. And thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about arthritis, which costs this country $128 billion a year and impacts, I think, 25% of adults over 18. There are various, many different types of arthritis. We've talked about a few of them here with Dr. Diane George, rheumatologist with Mecklenburg Medical Group Rheumatology. Nick Turkus is Senior Vice President for Health and Wellness for the Arthritis Foundation Mid-Atlantic Region. And Bonnie Walsh is a registered dietitian who also has a form of arthritis. We talked just before the break, you mentioned, Bonnie, this the fact that some people have arthritis or arthritis symptoms, and it turns out to be food-associated. They find out through work with a dietitian that they have a gluten intolerance. And Anne emails, before turning 50, I started having pain in my left knee, then my big toe joint, then my right thumb joint, then both elbows. I was afraid I was getting arthritis. A nutritionist told me I was sensitive to gluten and it was causing inflammation in my joints. I'm happy to say that since avoiding gluten, I have not had any joint pain. I wonder how many people have been diagnosed with arthritis that are simply gluten intolerant. How do you have any idea how much can you reach an incorrect diagnosis like that?
I think that's quite rare, actually. I mean, you know, there right now there's a lot of, you know, studies going into that and a lot of, you know, talk, you know, in the media about gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, you know, a small number of patients who do have a genuine, you know, gluten sensitivity or, you know, intolerance who get an arthritis. But it's very, very difficult to diagnose that.
But it seems that these things sometimes mimic the pain because it's in the area where arthritis is common.
Mm-hmm.
It mimics that condition. Could a doctor such as yourself misdiagnose because they just assume it's arthritis? It looks like arthritis. It quacks like a duck. It looks like it's a duck, but it's not a duck.
It's possible. And so I think it is possible. I mean, if, you know, a lot of times in arthritis, we don't find a cause. You know, we do a lot of blood work, we do x-rays, and we never find a cause. And so, you know, there are patients who look just like they have rheumatoid arthritis, but they don't have the blood test support it, not quite the right pattern of arthritis. And so, yes, I think a small percentage of those, they could have a gluten sensitivity type of arthritis. And the only way you would be able to diagnose that is by trying to an elimination diet where they would, you know, stop it for at least, I'd say, 8 weeks and see if their arthritis improves. Gluten, you know, sensitivity can also be, you know, there's a condition called celiac disease, which is where you get inflammation in the gut as well associated with, you know, eating gluten. And so sometimes those patients should see a gastroenterologist and have a type of study of their GI tract to see if they may have that condition, because that can be associated with an arthritis.
Put your headphones on. We'll take a phone call here from David in Charlotte. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I'm calling about diet, and I've read a book called The War Within from a Baptist University physician who talked about the amazing impacts of diet on mainly your sugar levels and the production of insulin and the connection from insulin production to inflammation in your joints.
Anybody want to talk about that? You're the dietitian here, Bonnie. Go ahead.
I know there has been some recent studies that they are doing on the connection between blood sugar, insulin, and inflammation, but there hasn't been any confirmation at this point on those studies. So there isn't, I don't have anything right now that I can say to support one way or the other.
You know, one of the biggest dangers with arthritis and diet is people that enjoy food just too much. You know, for every 1 pound extra that you carry in your stomach, it's an extra 4 pounds of pressure on your knee. So a lot of people may just that are overweight or obese, you have lots of extra aches and pains, and you can really reduce your pain by reducing your weight.
That was going to be one of my questions, the role of obesity or being overweight, the role that weight plays in determining how you are impacted by arthritis. If you have arthritis and you are overweight, and by the way, thank you for your call, David, is it simply exacerbating your pain or is it exacerbating the condition? Is it making it worse? And can you lessen the pain and reverse some of the problems by losing weight?
You can absolutely reduce your pain by reducing your weight. That's been proven. It's just like if you were carrying around an extra 20 pounds in your hands, you would feel an extra stress and strain. Just like if you're carrying that weight on your midsection, mm-hmm. that's going to put extra stress on your hips and on your knees, and those are the joints that are replaced most often. So there's definitely a connection there.
We have an email from Lisa who says, I've been active and athletic for 30-plus years, hiking, biking, lifting weights, backpacking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Starting in 2010, I started having pain in my left shoulder. I was told that it would need to be replaced in about 10 years. Since then, I've been told the same thing about my left hip. I have terrible arthritis in both hands and problems with my lumbar spine and both knees. I have never been overweight. I cannot walk without pain. I am 52 years old, and my life, as I envisioned it, has changed profoundly due to the unforeseen arthritic changes in my body. I cannot even garden the way I thought I would. I never saw this coming. Is that common?
That's very common. I mean, you know, 52 is definitely early for, you know, having such debilitating osteoarthritis or wear and tear arthritis. But it's not.
That maybe because she overdid the training and the exercising and the whatever she did?
Yes.
Gym?
I mean, I think that may have something to do with it. There may be a genetic component as well, because you don't see every 52-year-old who's done that much will have the same arthritis. So there's probably some component of a genetic component. But yes, I mean, that is something we see commonly. And, you know, at this point, I would say, you know, don't stop exercising. That's not what you should do. You should still keep moving, keep your joints and your body still very flexible, keep strengthening and range of motion.
That actually surprised me. I read a lot of this about this over the weekend, that if you have arthritis, you need to continue to stretch and you need to continue to exercise. And yet people who have arthritis are in pain and exercising is painful. How do you reach the compromise? Go ahead, Bonnie.
I don't mind speaking to that, because I'm in my 40s and I have always eaten a healthy diet. I was into diet big time in high school, knew that I was going to college, kind of going into this field. I used to ride my bike everywhere. I was big time into being active, into diet, being healthy, and I can say I never saw this coming either. So it was like wham, bam, and all of a sudden it was like my whole life had changed. My knees can't handle the biking. My husband and I used to have, I remember having, you know, the little carrier on the back of my bike for my baby. And, you know, I just thought this was going to be our way of life. You know, the kids were going to bike ride with us. We were going to do this. And then one day I couldn't bike ride anymore. And it just, you know, everything changed. And you just find other things that you can do. You know, we still enjoy camping and doing things, but I can't hike like I used to. Now it's, you know, short trails, you know, taking smaller walks, and I do yoga and other ways to stretch and water exercises.
Interesting you should mention yoga, because that's one of the things that I read. Find a good yogi if you have arthritis. What about the exercise component here? It's painful, the pain is your body saying stop, you're hurting yourself, so what are you supposed to do?
It sounds like a real paradox, but you're actually going to do much more damage to your body by not moving, by not exercising. And many people think of exercises that they have to do such a really high impact. You know, if you're going to run, you have to run a marathon. If you're going to bike, you have to bike, you know, across the state. You really just need to do physical activity and just break it down into chunks. You said you don't go on long hikes, but you do short walks. You know, you need to do 30 minutes of exercise a day, so why not do 3 10-minute walks, one in the morning, one at lunch, and one in the evening, instead of doing 1 30-minute walk. So you can break that up, and your body still
but
gets
your body,
the same benefit.
But pain is something in your body that says, there's something wrong, get this checked out, or stop doing what you're doing because it's going to hurt more because you're hurting yourself. So if you're in pain from arthritis and you're trying to exercise and it hurts, are you supposed to ignore the pain?
If you have dull pain, achy pain, you know, try to move that joint a few repetitions to get it moving. But if you have sharp, stabbing pain, then you probably need to back off for that day.
Not that I don't believe you, but let me ask the doctor the same question.
So I think it's important, you know, it is important to exercise, but yes, it's a dilemma I have all the time with my patients. They are in pain. How do they exercise? And I think you have to work with your doctor to make sure you're on the right pain medications, you know, the right type of pain medication for you, so that, you know, you can get into a routine where maybe just after taking the medications, you're able to start exercising, walking, starting to use your joints. There may be a certain time of the day. So, for example, rheumatoid arthritis is worse in the morning. You get a lot of stiffness when you first wake up. So that's a good time to start stretching, trying to help your joints. And with rheumatoid, unlike osteoarthritis, actually feels better with exercise. So osteoarthritis feels worse with exercise. Rheumatoid feels better. So those patients can stretch and do a lot of things to help their arthritis in the morning. With osteoarthritis, I think it's more, you know, towards the end of the day, trying to take a walk. Swimming is very good, and it is very low impact on the joints. Sometimes I send my patients to physical therapy to help them initially start getting into the pattern of doing, you know, the right type of exercise for them, and working on the right muscles and range of motion.
The Arthritis Foundation actually sponsors physical activity programs throughout Charlotte and North Carolina, a walking program, Walk with Ease, an aquatics program that's done in the water, a land-based exercise program, and Tai Chi, which is great for balance, stretching, and strengthening of your joints.
Let me go back to food, because one of you mentioned the Mediterranean diet, because we've heard such good things about the Mediterranean diet, and that does not mean pasta. That's a different diet. And among the things that are common in the Mediterranean diet are lots of oils, like olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, omega-3 fatty acids from the fish in that diet, cold water fish. Would fish oil pills serve the same purpose as eating actual fish?
Probably. You know, we always say that we haven't found and discovered, you know, they're always discovering more things in food, more vitamins and minerals and things like that in food. We haven't discovered everything. So I'd have to say probably not. But as far as the omega-3s, you're probably going to get a pretty good amount taking supplements. And, you know, it's probably a good idea to take some omega-3 supplements in addition to eating a Mediterranean diet, because most people do not eat fish every day. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a good idea to kind of supplement by taking some on a daily basis.
And what about olive oils and other oils that are supposed to be healthy for you? Why? Why do they seem to help?
Olive oil especially is a good antioxidant because it has the polyphenols in it, which inhibits the COX. And most people that take medicine for their arthritis are usually taking some anti-inflammatory like a Mobic or a Celebrex or something like that, which inhibits, is that correct, the COX-2. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what the olive oil does. So it's similar acting to the medications that they're on. So it's also helping them, giving them a little bit more boost to help the inflammation.
From a doctor's point of view, is it better to start people down that road with changing their diet and adding things that are good for their condition, or is it easier and better for them to be on a drug, or is it a combination of the things that we're talking about?
I think it's a combination. I think diet, I haven't found that diet alone helps to just treat the pain from arthritis. But certainly, I can give you some specific examples. For example, in rheumatoid arthritis, fish oils, there are some studies that show that it improves joint inflammation and pain, as also patients with rheumatoid arthritis have a higher risk of heart disease. So it also reduces that risk by taking fish oil. So that's actually, I always tell my patients to take fish oils. In terms of, for example, gout, you know, there are certain things to avoid in gout to prevent gout episodes and inflammation of the joints. For example, beer and wine are triggering gout, you know, inflammation in your joints. Shellfish, you know, shrimp, lobster, those kind of things can trigger attacks of gout and be very, very painful. And then red meat. So my patients have found that it's better to avoid those things and, you know, not pay for it, you know, in the next couple of days. So there are certain things I tell them to avoid, and it does, that does work. But
we mentioned, is it Enbrel? What was it? Enbrel?
Enbrel, yes.
There's also a drug called Cymbalta, which I think was developed for as an antidepressant, which seems to have positive effects on chronic pain conditions. Another breakthrough is the use of an epilepsy drug like Lyrica for this. What are the long-term effects of taking these drugs?
Well, you know, so far we haven't – there haven't been any really – drastically, you know, bad effects that we've been found. I mean, Cymbalta, I like to think of it like aspirin was developed first, you know, for pain, and then they found that it works for heart, you know, heart disease. And so similarly, Cymbalta was developed for, you know, depression, and then they found that it works on certain pathways with nerves that, you know, reduces your neurotransmitters and helps, you know, in pain. And not just a lot of different pain. There's fibromyalgia pain. There's just generalized musculoskeletal pain it's now approved for. So, you know, so far, my patients who have been on this, you know, some of them get initial side effects, and so, like, you know, we don't continue it. But generally, it's very well tolerated and does improve their pain.
And in the more severe conditions, I'm told that you use opioids and corticosteroids. How long can a person be on those drugs?
So opioids I don't use that much because I don't find it works that well in inflammation pain. It works more in osteoarthritis wear and tear type of pain. And those, you know, I prefer not to use them long term because they can be addictive. But some patients, there's no other way.
And are there things in the pipeline that you know about for either finding a cure or better treat what already exists? And I have about 20 seconds left.
You know, in terms of finding a cure, that's still, you know, that's still the goal. There isn't anything yet for either type of arthritis. But there are still much better and better drugs every day being produced for rheumatoid arthritis. And I know for osteoarthritis, too, there are some things in the pipeline they're looking at in terms of improving pain.
That's Dr. Diane George, a rheumatologist with Mecklenburg Medical Group Rheumatology. Also with us today, Bonnie Walsh, registered dietitian, and who also suffers from various forms of arthritis. And Nick Turkus, Senior Vice President for Health and Wellness for the Arthritis Foundation, Central Mid-Atlantic region. There we go. Thank you all for being here.